All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of the Porchcast. We are coming to you from Oscar Blues Brewery. We're actually at the Tasty Weasel today here, right next to their headquarters, and I'm being joined by Chad Malis. What's your role, Chad? Marketing?
Yeah, I'm the marketing guy here.
Marketing guy.
Marketing nerd, marketing geek, marketing guy.
Now, I want to paint this picture real quick. So I show up in the Tasty Weasel, and I'm waiting for Chad to roll in, and he literally rolls into the tasting room on a fat tire bike, just riding through the brewery.
Yeah, there's a lot of bikes around here. You know, I think obviously cycling has been a big part of our culture, and you know, continues to be so with Reap Cycles. And yeah, a lot of people get around by bikes and skateboards and big tricycles and whatever's fun. You know.
Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna get more into the Reap bicycles in a little bit, but the big story for today is news that broke, I think, last week of Oscar Blues acquiring a Scarcity Brewery out of Florida.
Yeah, so, Tampa, Florida.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about how this all came about, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about Oscar Blues' role as part of the United Craft Brewers group, mm-hmm. and yeah, how did this all come about? Let's start there.
Well, you know, it's been no secret that Joey was looking, you know, for additional ways to fund the continued growth of Cigar City, and mm-hmm. He's made it pretty public knowledge that there are a lot of challenges out there that, you know, they're coming up against that are bigger than what they've experienced before, and you know, they were just really looking for ways to continue to grow in the face of a lot of competition and knowing they're capacity constrained, and you know, probably are going to need to build another brewery, so there's a lot of financial obligation there, particularly for one owner, and Joey doesn't like to take out big loans, and was, you know, trying to figure out the path and the future of a great brewery.
Sure. Now, as you alluded to just a moment ago, this hasn't been any surprise. Joey's been kind of shopping the market a little bit, even going so far as there was a report a few months ago that they were planning on selling to Anheuser-Busch. That report ended up being wrong. It was reported as a rumor. You know, we won't get into that side of things, but you know, when it comes to seeing something like that, were you all already kind of in discussions at that time? Tell me about the timeline of how this all came about.
Yeah, I mean, Joey and Dale had talked, you know, over a mm-hmm. year ago, just crossing paths. You know, I think people that feel very similar stress and challenges and questions, and you know, I think they can relate to each other, and they're both good dudes, and they can, you know, feel like they can communicate and learn from each other. So it's not necessarily a new, you know, relationship.
Sure.
And it's something that feels comfortable, and they just have a lot in common, you know, a lot of the same challenges. So
now,
something that goes back a little ways, and again, just feels comfortable, I think, for them.
Totally. And I think that's kind of the bigger point right there, is that the commonality between the two, both, you know, from, and we'll talk a little bit about the diversity of both organizations, but also in just like the mentality. I feel like Oscar Blues, down to its core, even though it's a large organization now, you all still try to remain as uncorporate as possible. I feel like Cigar City kind of shares that same ethos.
Yeah, you know, I think so, and I think that's why, you know, we ended up coming together, is that we all want to continue to grow. We want to do things our way. You know, I don't think we want to conform or follow some plan that's out there. I think we all want to stay true to our culture and why we got into this to begin with.
Mm.
And, you know, I think that's the goal. And the number one priority is just to keep it real. And I think, again, just going back to it, it feels comfortable to hang out and to be true to who we are and collaborate. So, you know, I think that's ultimately, you know, what really got it rolling.
Now, I want to kind of touch on this point. When you all announced the kind of merger, the mm-hmm. acquisition, the headline of the press release was unlike anything I've ever read before. Oscar Blues rolls up a Cigar City blunt. Now,
right.
I think there's nothing that kind of captures that anti-corporate culture better than that kind of a headline. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, we, you know, it goes back to what we've been saying. We want it to remain fun. You know, the stakes are higher, and you certainly, it's a business. But we all got into this, you know, for the same reasons. And nobody wants to lose sight of that. And, you know, we like to poke fun and poke fun at ourselves,
sure.
You know, poke fun at what people expect and try to go against the grain. So just having fun, really.
Totally. Yeah. I kind of picture, how does this kind of, like, once you all have this announcement, I picture the two groups coming together and just watching Straight Outta Compton together and just like saying like middle fingers up to everyone. Right. Is that kind of like the mentality going on here?
I guess it's our own version of that. You know, I mean, it's against the grain and doing what you love. There certainly is some middle finger in there. You know, mostly to again what people expect from you or the status quo says is what you should do. You know, I don't think any of us are driven and get up and get out of bed to go into the brewery to just do what everybody else is doing. And we want to, Joey has a great culture down there. It's awesome to go hang with those guys and see what they're doing. And then coming back here and just feeling the culture here. They're very similar, but they're different. And that's what makes it great. You know?
Totally. Now, we talked about this a little earlier in terms of diversity of both organizations. Cigar City now has their beer available. They have a Cigar City location in the airport, Tampa. They also sell their beers to the Disney resorts. They also have their beer available on Carnival Cruises. They just added a new brew pub 20 minutes north of the brewery, and then they just opened a cidery and meadery. You all are kind of on the similar vein in terms of diversity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you all started in Lyons, correct?
Yeah.
And then opened here in Longmont. Yep. You also have a brew pub nearby. You've got Chubb Burger, which is a chain of burger joints that you all started recently. Yep. Opened in Brevard, North Carolina. Got Austin coming on board soon.
Yep.
You've got Reed Bicycles. Yep. You're doing Hot Box Roasters. And before we started talking on the show, you just mentioned sodas as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So what are you all just kind of like dabbling in every thing that you can possibly get into?
Again, you know, I think it's all things that we're into and that we want to be involved in. You know, I think there's a ton of stuff going on, and you look at it and it looks like a mess, and it can be a massive distraction if it wasn't something that you're just authentically into.
Sure.
You know, if people were bummed that they had to go work on the bike project, we wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that, you know, you have to stay focused on the beer and what you have going on. But we have really committed people here. And, you know, Chris and Tim are doing a great job over at Reeb. You know, Jason and Anita are running the restaurant side of things. So you put good people that are passionate about what they're doing in the right places, and you can move really quickly and have a lot of fun doing it. And that's where all of our projects come from. You know, it's like we're brewing beer and we have spent grain, and we're trying to find a farm to take it to, and we're buying beef, you know, for the restaurant. It's like, well, why don't we have a farm that has grass-fed, you know, cattle, and we can supplement it with our spent grain and sell ourselves the hamburger. We know that it's quality. It's exactly what we're looking for. It's handcrafted. And so it's like, okay, well, let's invest in the Hops and Heifers farm. And you start doing, and then, you know, you do that by having Farmer Jeff come to the table with a passion and a plan and want to take it on and run it. And then that, you know, that's up and running. And, you know, we're drinking coffee in the morning. It's like, man, this coffee tastes like shit, you know, like we know what we want in coffee. Let's, you know, next thing you know, a roaster shows up.
Yeah. And we're drinking some of that coffee right now.
Yeah. Cold brew. We got cold brew on draft, and we got it on nitro just in the tap room over there.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. It helps our ADD problem. You know, ADD is great when you're heavily caffeinated.
So what's next? I mean, it kind of seems like you all are, you know, in a way like the Vail Resorts of beer, except not with the corporate culture. Are you all going to buy a ski resort next, or maybe come out with a line of yo-yos? Like what are your all's other passions that you feel like maybe you could spin off into?
Yeah. I mean, we Dale just put in a really cool, bike freestyle course at the farm, so yeah. I guess a ski resort could be next. You know, any of that. I mean, as long as they're independent and we can do whatever the hell we want there, I guess that could be on the table. I suppose seems fun.
I feel like I feel like an Oscar Blues Froyo stand could be right along the next. Speaking of Froyo, I want to take a second. We'll get back into the conversation, but as always, we want to throw a big shout out to our sponsor, First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, located at 1309 26th Street in Denver, Colorado. It's basically an adult Froyo stand. Pour your own draft system. They have 40 different taps in their tap room, and you can try anywhere from an ounce up to, you know, a full 12 ounce pour of whatever beer you'd like. You know, have you ever been over there yet?
It's a FOB system, right?
right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you can actually put your, there's a little key identification, keeps track of how much beer you pour out each time. It's really, really great for discovery. So definitely be sure to check out First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen next time you're in Denver.
Yeah, it's cool. You kind of help yourself. You don't have to necessarily like have that like transaction commerce thing in the way. It's, you can just kind of help yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you can try as much or as little as you want. You don't have to commit to a full pour. Yeah, really neat. Okay, cool. So back to is it a merger? Is it an acquisition? Would you say?
Yeah. It was an acquisition.
Okay, so I think people are often confused about the role of Fireman Capital. Yeah. I know the initial report was that Fireman Capital was the main, force behind the acquisition. What's their role, and then also what's the role of United Craft Brewers?
Yeah, so United Craft Brewers actually has transitioned to Oscar Blues Holding Company.
Okay.
With Oscar Blues coming on board, and you know, we talked about it. I'd say probably about a year ago. You know, we were looking at similar opportunities and challenges that Joey's seeing. You know, it's like the capacity here in Longmont was starting to get thin. Capacity in North Carolina is getting thin. So looking for ways to grow. And as the beer, craft beer industry is changing, opportunities like the Perrin, you know, Perrin was looking to make some ownership changes over there. You know, we needed a way to fund the next chapter. So we found a untraditional funding partner with Fireman Capital, and you know, they really see eye to eye on how we like to be aggressive, whether it's the soda project or you know, working to collaborate with Perrin and bringing them on board and looking to expand capacity by going to Austin. We expanded in Brevard, 20,000 square feet. We have 60,000 square feet here that we just kind of walk through outside of the Tasty Weasel, and we're opening a brewery in Austin. So all of that stuff takes funding. And we found a great partner that wants to be aggressive alongside of us and let us do our thing.
And still kind of experiment with some of these out-of-the-box ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, the cool part about it is that when we bought Perrin, Keith Klopsik was able to, you know, really invest in Oscar Blues Holding Company. Dale Tetchis, you know, our founder, owner, put a huge part into that that holding company as well. And now Joey, again, who had a number one priority of keeping his culture and doing things against the grain and doing whatever the hell he wants, quite frankly, is now, you know, a board member as well. So the thing is a collective that is craft led, and that's to me what is exciting about it. And that's what's allowing us to roll up a Cigar City blunt instead of put out some bullshit press release about, you know, acquisition and funding. You know, I mean, it's not what it's about. We, you know, we're coming in and busting our ass every day, doing what we love and being a brewery, and that's what Joey wants to do. That's what Perrin wants to do.
Yeah.
And our funding partner is like, yeah, you guys are doing great. Yeah. Do what you do.
Absolutely.
You know? So transitioning it to Oscar Blues Holding Company, I think, was just really showing the leadership role that Dale and our team is able to bring, and the tools and support that we can provide to somebody like Perrin, saying, hey, man, we screwed this up bad when we did it. Mm-hmm. Like, we think maybe you guys should do this. You know. Or, you know, that really worked for us. You know, try that. Or, so.
And that's kind of going to be the main focus of that relationship with Cigar City moving forward is kind of like directional assistance with funding and then also sharing of resources, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the main resource being knowledge. It's like, you know, we've been able to take the small town Colorado brand, you know, it started in the town of Lyons, in a town of 1,500 people, and we're in 49 states and looking to get into the 50th one by mid-year. We've screwed a lot of things up along the way, so hopefully we can point some people in the right direction. We've got great people in the right places. You know, Chris Russell and Lou leading our sales team, and the marketing team here has done a great job of taking this brand and keeping it authentic. And then we have Jim Weatherwax and Jeremy who help on the production side, and Tim on the brew side. We just have a really great team, and we can offer a lot of resources. Again, mostly on things that we screwed up that hopefully nobody will follow in the footsteps. And it's been really great just on initial calls with the Cigar City folks to collaborate on where they want to go and what they want to do. And, you know, take what we've learned going from Lyons to Longmont to North Carolina, now heading to Austin, and all the distribution and back end stuff that goes along with it, and just applying it as a great resource for this collective of craft brewers who want to be hands on. They want to go into the office every day and do what they do, and they want to be proud of it, and they want their community to be proud of it, and that's we're just trying to, you know, keep doing the same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, I can't go without asking this question, because all the beer nerds are wondering, do you think that this kind of unity will allow Cigar City to be available in markets that you all already have a strong foothold in?
Yeah, I think so. You know, they have such a huge demand in Florida right now,
sure.
And they're really, you know, capacity strapped based on our initial conversations and being there. You know, I think that's the first thing that we'll be able to try and help contribute to them, is to help the capacity side.
Sure.
Once, you know, they make sure that they're taking care of the places that they're already distributed, there's no out of stocks or anything, start to look at spreading out. So, you know, I think so. I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the beer drinkers want it.
Yeah.
As long as we can help them scale and keep the quality that they've been bringing to the table from day one, then I don't see why I can't make more and take it more places.
Sure. Now, in terms of Oscar Blues Holding Company, you mentioned Perrin. You've got Cigar mm-hmm. City now. Am I wrong in thinking Wasatch and Squatters?
Yeah.
Okay, they're also in there
yep.
as well.
Yep.
What's next? Do you all foresee, is there kind of a strategic plan of, you know, adding more to this supergroup and kind of having it be the craft beer version of remaining independent while still growing? Or is it something where you're just going to play it by ear and see what opportunities come forward?
Yeah, you know, if you've hung out with Oscar Blues, we don't have big strategy meetings. We don't have board meetings and that crap. We really try to stay nimble and try to act small. And when we see opportunity and, you know, everybody feels good about it, we get after it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the new collaboration with Cigar City is very new. So, you know, we're just in the early stages of that and quite excited about what's ahead there. So we got a lot of work to do just to get that relationship up and running. And,
sure.
You know, we're just pretty psyched on that right now. I don't know what's down the line, but
mm-hmm.
that one's, you know, right in our lap right now, and everybody's excited about it.
Well, what kind of, is there any kind of a blueprint of the type of brewery that would fit into the archetype of an Oscar Blues Holding Company type portfolio?
You know, I think anybody that has a great culture and,
mm-hmm.
and has a good fit with our culture,
sure.
that's key. Like, that's, we want to do business with people we want to hang out with.
Totally.
So honestly, I think that is the most important thing, which is kind of anti-corporate in itself. But, and then I think, you know, quality beer, you want to have, you know, the beer drinker has to have respect for the beer, and we have to all be pretty excited about the quality of the beer. So, you know, culture and beer. And then, you know, we've been able, again, we've grown, you know, to 50 states, and it's a distribution we have some insights in. And we've also grown capacity while I think improved our quality, you know, pretty consistently. So, you know, a brewery that is looking to grow because they have great demand and they have a lot of respect in the marketplace and they need to grow capacity and they're looking to add distribution. I think we have, you know, some good experience in that realm that can really help. And then it's just all about collaborating and making sure that you do it the way that's right for that brewery. Joey and the guys down at Cigar City know what's right for that brewery. If you go down there, you can feel it. Like it has a strong culture and the beer drinker feels it. They have a great following and only they know what's right for that brewery. So just trying to enable them to keep doing what they're doing. They're obviously doing something right, man. They're killing it down there. So.
Absolutely. Cool. Let's talk about what's next for Oscar Blues. I mean, why don't we take this opportunity to go ahead and crack open the
cool.
latest in your all's beer portfolio.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Beerito.
Yeah, so Burrito is a Vienna Mexican lager, and it's something that Jeremy Rudolph is a big fan of, that style of beer. He's a guy that's been here for 9 years and has been a huge asset in a lot of different ways at Oscar Blues. Very innovative guy, and that's something that he's been staying on for a couple of years, so we've been doing a Vienna lager. We opened Cyclops Bike Cantina. It's a restaurant concept that has our bike shop in it for Reeb Cycles, and it's like a Mexican cantina, so we were able to start brewing and canning that beer specifically for that location. And, you know, much like most of the decisions around here at Oscar Blues, people were responding to it well. They were really liking it. They
yeah.
were starting to drink it. When we launched in Utah, you know, you can't pour on draft anything over 4%. And Burrito is right around there. So we kind of zeroed in and targeted that. And came up with a 4% beer that everybody liked the subtle complexities of the malt bill. And yeah, bam, it's in a can and it's available at 4%.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's available nationwide.
That's
so
great.
That's just this week that happens.
Yeah, it's perfect for the summer.
Yeah.
That's really great. Now, there's an interesting story about the malt bill here with this beer. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at the last couple of beers that we've put out, they've all been a product of a lot of creativity that's come out of the brew staff here. You know, it's led by Tim Matthews, but a lot of really talented people. Just the use of different raw ingredients has really came out with some unique flavors. And we've just been investing in it, you know, heavily over the last 5 years. And Tim travels the world in making sure that, you know, we're communicating with the grower. And in this case, you know, the maltster, because this thing really is all about the malt. Mm-hmm. And bringing, you know, unique and a little bit more complex and subtle. You know, I think we started off with very bold and over the top versions of beers, and right now we're doing some more subtle things that I think really round out the offerings, you know. But yeah, it's definitely a commitment to raw ingredients, and a shout to Tim and that team and what they've been able to do. And this one, you know, is a good group of Weyermann malts, but also we incorporated a local Colorado maltster as well, Troubadour, which is in northern Colorado, and we've done some projects with them in the past. One of These Days was a beer that we did last year as a collaboration that came out. It was pretty much exclusively to Northern Colorado, sorry about that. But really wanted to try to continue to develop that relationship, you know, between grower and maltster and the craft that goes into that. And this beer is so dependent on the subtle complexities of that malt. We were able to really dig in and get hands on, and they've done a great job of providing malt that makes a very unique beer. And you know, that process of getting engaged with the local, you know, ingredient provider, as well as that international group that we're talking about, is awesome. And we're looking to expand that. We've started, you know, reaching out in North Carolina, and already have some things going on in Texas as well. So I think it's just commitment to the beer. And
yeah, you and I were talking earlier about that relationship with your growers. You know, for maltsters, you're saying it's even more unique in particular because the malts are grown specifically for beer, whereas, you know, other ingredients can be utilized in other fields, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you grow corn, there's a ton of different places you can sell it, and if, you know, if it's not all sold in one market, you can switch to another market, but there's really only one market, you know, for these guys, and Tim has taken a lot of interest and put a lot of energy into getting on the same page with the grower, you know, and in this case the maltster, and making sure that they know what we want and what we're looking for when we're engaging with them, and they have confidence in trying the different varieties and trying to make it happen, and you know, it's important for us to understand what goes into them committing to a crop as well, and if everybody is on the same page, it can be incredibly productive to get to the end result. So it's just, you know, spending face time and open discussion and education, you know, from the grower to us and from the brewery back. And Tim has made a huge commitment, as you said last time you were here chatting with us. I think he called us from a hop field
in France. Yeah.
Yeah, in France. Yeah, yeah. And he just got back from Australia, you know, looking at hops for next year's, you know, IPA crop. Mm. And you know, now we're sitting here talking about the Northern Colorado malts that are so important to this beer. It's just cool to really see that commitment kind of paying off and the growers being so involved, and they're so stoked to, you know, about the beer. It's just been a really, really cool collaboration.
And I think that's so interesting. Like I was just going to reference the last time that we met up. I came up to the brewery a few months ago to talk a little bit more about Oscar Blues IPA and the unique story of how you all utilize the Southern Hemisphere hops. And I think it's so often taken for granted just where these ingredients come from that, you know, we don't often see or fully get the full gravity of when we're drinking a beer, but Tim is actually out there meeting with the hop growers, actually tasting the hops and getting a feel for what the terroir is like and walking through the fields and, you know, calling him in France when he was actually meeting with the hop growers is I think kind of the most sobering of moments when you realize like, yeah, there are other people all the way around the world that are helping to create the product that we're drinking. So I think that's such an often taken for granted side of the industry that we overlook.
You know, I think as the beer drinker continues to get more and more educated, which is awesome, you know, quality and subtlety is going to continue to rise to the top. And Tim is just really embraced, you know, all of the Oscar Blues beers, and to be able to scale and grow capacity the way that we have and really zero in on the quality is just a huge pat on the back to this whole team over here that is super committed, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. A few other kind of news points throughout the week. It was actually a really busy week in the beer world. Deschutes earlier this week, kind of following on the heels of your all's kind of expansion and growth as a company. Deschutes also had a bit major announcement as well, as they announced the second brewery that they're opening up in Roanoke, Virginia. I think they plan to begin construction on that in 2019, I believe. It should be opening up 108 jobs. The running came down to North Carolina, which is a very familiar territory for you all. Sure. South Carolina, and then finally Virginia. What's your all's take in terms of the growth of the industry? We're now seeing some of the, I mean, you all were part of that major trend, then New Belgium, which actually they announced this week that their Asheville location will open May 2nd. So we're seeing a lot of these West Coast or West part of the U.S. breweries opening on the East Coast to help with their distribution. We're seeing a lot of these mid-sized to larger breweries now coming into their own, growing and really focusing on expansion now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for us, I think it was, again, as we talk often, it was cultural. You know, we're deathly afraid of becoming too big to where we lose that identity and the reason that we got into this. And, you know, as we're looking at capacity here in Colorado, you know, we went for a bike ride in North Carolina, at Pisgah National Forest. Dale's got a buddy out there. He had been going there for years. And I'm like, man, we really like it here. We want to hang out here more. You know? I'm like, well, we should. Look at buildings to put a brewery in, you know. And again, our strategies often don't come from a boardroom or some bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And it just comes from things that we're passionate about. So, you know, that concept of trying to stay small by engaging with another community and building another brewery that's similar to what we have, for us was just a heck of a lot of fun. And, you know, we were looking at capacity again, and we did, you know, some expansion. But the opportunity to spend more time in Austin, Texas, and bring that brewery on board. Again, it just sounds fun, and you know, it's great for beer freshness and quality. You know,
totally.
Beer does not like to travel.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
Totally.
And it definitely helps. You can say that it helps like shipping costs and all of that stuff. But if you look at, you know, our brewery in North Carolina is in a town of 7,000 that's in the forest. So, you know, it was definitely a passion play there. And we like the scene down in Austin. I mean, there's great craft beer scene down there. The energy down there is awesome. It's just like really, really growing super quickly. There's a great food scene, you know, there's a great outdoor scene. There's obviously a great music scene.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. So, you know, our strategy just kind of came about.
And it's a weird place. I mean, it's just like a fun, weird, goofy place. I was just down there for South by Southwest last week, and I mean, I saw some of the weirdest things happen in Austin, Texas. But, I mean, it fits kind of that kind of goofy, funky mentality that you guys have. And I think it's a perfect fit from an identity standpoint.
So. Yeah, it felt good. And I think, you know, that comes by just being real. When we look around and like, yeah, man, let's go hang out there.
Yeah.
You know, we looked at a couple different places and it was like, man, I don't know. I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time there. But
sure.
Austin, everybody's like, yeah, let's.
And I think you're dead on in terms of the beer scene. I feel like it's one that's really starting to come into its own. You see, you know, Jester King is tremendous. Mm-hmm. You have Austin Beer Works. Live Oak is doing some really great stuff in terms of the German styles. And then also I visited our friend, Courtney Cobb, over at Blue Owl Brewing, which is they're doing all sour mash bills. So it's that's kind of a more of a unique style. And I think that people are starting. The Austinites down there are really starting to take hold of some of those growing emerging styles and flavors.
Yeah, they had some legislative changes down there that really opened it up.
Absolutely.
So I think you're seeing a lot of rapid change right now and a lot of excitement because the beer drinker is ready. It's just the laws had to change a little bit and let those breweries be creative and expand. And it's an exciting time for craft beer down there, you know, like a lot of places in America right now.
Now you mentioned the North Carolina brewery being in kind of the wooded wilderness out in the middle of nowhere. It's interesting. We've got two other breweries that are kind of in those similar settings. We've got Treehouse which just announced an expansion. They're opening up a new brewery in Charlton, Massachusetts, and it's going to be 45,000 square foot, 50 barrel brew house, and they're making some tremendous stuff. Really excited to see more Treehouse becoming available, and I'm sure a lot of the beer geeks out there are as well. And also Fonta Flora out of North Carolina. They're kind of like in the middle of nowhere as well, and they just announced a big expansion to a 4,500 square foot facility, bumping their capacity up to 2,500 barrels a year. So really exciting times for the beer industry as a whole. But yeah, it's interesting because we expected going into 2016 that the main storyline was gonna be acquisitions all the way through, but it seems like a lot more is focused on expansion and growth, and I think that's a good sign for the industry.
Yeah, man. I mean, it just comes down to it's about the beer, yeah. You know. And there are a lot of great breweries that are making good beer right now, and they all are super passionate about what they do, and they play a key role in their community. You know, you talk about funding and acquisition and all of that crap, and you know, I don't think that's why most people got into this industry. Yeah. They got into it because they love the beer, and I think the beer drinker is more concerned about the beer as well. So, you know, it is business, and you have to focus on some of those things, but we're just trying to keep it fun around here, and mm-hmm. I think the beer drinker responds to it, and I think the industry itself, I think it's important for us all to hold on to our culture and keep it fun, because that's where the energy comes from.
Sure. I like how you put that. You know, when we started Porch Drinking, we never really anticipated covering all of these granular type things that now have become very dominant, a dominant theme in the industry in terms of, you know, acquisitions and mergers and all that stuff. We got into it for storytelling. So
yeah.
Kind of to round it out, tell me your story. How did you get involved with Oscar Blues, and how did you fit into this family?
Me personally?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I moved out to Colorado to ride mountain bikes. And, you know, I had a couple passions that brought me to the mountains, and it was beer, bikes, and music. Mm-hmm. And stumbled across the town of Lyons, Colorado, a couple of years after Dale had. Mm-hmm. And there was a great music scene there. There's great access to trails. And Dale was making great beer. And I crossed paths with Dale riding bikes, and then we'd ride down the hill and see each other on the porch at Oscar Blues drinking a beer, and then the music would start and see him there, and just started hanging out. And he had some custom bikes made at one point that were, half of them were for employees. There were six of them. Half of them were for employees, and three were for giveaway, for a promotion. Mm-hmm. It was recycle 3,501 cans and get a free bike. And two of those three bikes were spoken for, and one didn't get claimed because the qualifications of the giveaway weren't met. So there was an extra bike, and he was, him and a couple of buddies were unloading from 24 Hours of Moab in the back alley, and I was walking to the bar to see the band. And I was like, hey man, I heard that, you know, one of those bikes is still available. What do I got to do to get it? And he's like, well, we need some help, you know, packaging beers. That was when there was like a handful of people doing it. And I was like, well, I have a job, but I could probably come for a couple hours over lunch, and then I was working from home at the time, so I was riding my bike all the time, basically a bike bum, and then I could come in like 4, you know, I can get out a little early, and you can send, you know, some people home. And he's like, well, okay, the bike costs this much, so this many hours. And I was like, well, what if I, you know, trade in the bike I'm on right now? And he's like, cool, this many hours. And I was like, deal. And he handed me the bike and wrote in marker on the wall, Chad owes me this many hours. And I successfully went out and dislocated my shoulder on the bike that day.
Oh my gosh.
And so I had a hard time getting started on the six packing ring.
Yeah.
I just started marking hours off on the wall, in marker, until we just got sick of that. And we opened the Longmont Brewery in addition to the Lions one, and mm-hmm. Needed a little more bandwidth. So we just had a beer and a sandwich, and he brought me on full time. So that was about 9 years ago.
I don't think that story could get any more Colorado if you tried. Maybe if there was flannel, dogs, a beard involved.
It's kind of what happens around here, you know. I think this culture is something that is pretty unique. And people say all the time, oh, you know, the brand, you know, Oscar Blues it seems so real and like authentic. And I think it's because we live it. It's a lifestyle. It's not like a marketing like plot to sell beer. It's a lifestyle, and everybody here bring something unique to that lifestyle, and that collective group of people make up what Oscar Blues is, and it is, it stays authentic to itself, and it's cool to see it grow and see North Carolina becoming, you know, it's got its own take on the Oscar Blues culture. And it's very deeply rooted in the same things.
Yeah.
But you know, the characters over there are a little different than here, but yeah, it's, you know, just like that story of how we met, it's all pretty organic and authentic, and it revolves around doing what you love. You know?
Totally. Cool. Well, we always end the show talking about, a beer that we had this week that really stood out. I'll start so that you can have a little moment to think about your own for this week. But last night we actually had our New Kids on the Block festival, and for those who aren't familiar, it's a beer festival that consists of breweries that are 2 years old or younger. Some may think that that's a little bit limiting, but luckily we live in Colorado where there's a brewery opening every week, and so we had a tremendous lineup of breweries out there. A few that I was really stoked on. You know, we constantly refer to Weldworks up in Greeley as one that we're really impressed with. And they brought their Juicy Bits, which is their take on the East Coast IPA, and it was fantastic. They also had their Vanilla Medianoche, a 15% Imperial Stout with vanilla flavors to it. That was tremendous. But I was really surprised by Westbound and Downs IPA as well. They're on the way up to Summit County on
Springs.
Yeah, in Idaho Springs, correct. And they brought a really tremendous beer there. And those were some of the major standouts. I mean, Broken Compass brought their coconut porter, rather, and you know, that's a classic. It's actually very, very coconut forward, just like your all's Death by Coconut. So great nod there. And but yeah, what's something that stood out to you this week, Chad?
Well, just, you know, spent some time down in Tampa, Florida, around the Cigar City guys.
Nice.
And, they do a lot of different things with their Maduro Brown.
Yeah.
And they had a coffee Maduro Brown, nice. And they did a really great job on that. So I liked the creativity they bring. They do a lot of different things with that base beer, and the beer itself is good. But I liked what they were doing with it, you know, particularly with the espresso and the coffee. And I thought that was, just in the last week, definitely something that was exciting to me to go down there and see what they were doing creatively and from a quality perspective. So, yeah, I'd have to go with that one.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much once again for joining us. We're really excited about Oscar Blues and everything that you all have moving forward. Just a reminder for those tuning in, be sure to stop into First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen the next time you're in Denver. They're located at 1309 26th Street, right off of Larimer. Pour your own draft system. Opportunity to sample 40 plus different beers. You can pour your own ounces and track those. Really great opportunity to explore and discover new beers. First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. That's it for this episode 18 of the Porchcast. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll have another one up soon. I'm Tristan, and we'll catch you next time.